In this episode of Pop Culture Weekly, I'm joined by Deadline.com senior editor Dom Patton. We talk all about the strike, a look at summer season, and what we can look forward to this fall in the movies. Let's go!
Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon from iHeartRadio. Your pop culture news, views, reviews, and celebrity interviews on all the movies, TV, music, and pop culture you crave weekly. Here's Kyle McMahon.
Hello and welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon, and thank you for joining me. I can't thank you enough. Every week you tune in and hit me up and tell me what you think and tell me what you're seeing and what you're loving, what you're not loving, what you're listening to, and I just love it all. You guys are awesome, and you make this show what it is, and you're also sharing it. You know, you're sharing your favorite episodes on social and all, and I can't thank you enough for that because that makes us continue to grow. Also, your Apple podcast reviews do huge things for us, so thank you for doing that if you've done that, and if you haven't yet, consider it. You know, give an honest review, and I might just feature your review right here on the show. Today, I'm excited because I'm talking to, once again, Dominic Patton. Dom is senior editor with Deadline Hollywood, which, you know, Deadline.com is such a huge resource for me and always has been. I go to Deadline.com multiple times a day because they have a full staff that is incredibly on top of everything that's breaking in Hollywood. So, you know, movies, TV, music, they are covering it with in-depth reporting. I love Deadline. And so I'm excited to talk to Dom today about the strike. Now going, you know, into its, what, fourth? It started in May, June, July, August, fifth month of the strike. And, you know, where things stand as they are now, when we can expect the artists and creatives to, you know, get what they're due. And what happens if they don't come to an agreement, all that stuff. We're going to cover it all with Dom. I'm also going to ask him about, you know, 2023, the summer movie season was pretty incredible with Barbie and Oppenheimer. Of course, the big Barbenheimer double feature people were doing, which I loved and did myself. And what Dom is looking forward to this fall. You know, I'm a big horror fan, and so there's some horror movies I'm looking forward to as well as some other titles. So we talk all about that. Let's get right into my conversation with Dominic Patton from Deadline.com. I am here with Dominic Patton, senior editor for Deadline Hollywood. Welcome back. Thanks for speaking with me, Dom.
Oh, always a pleasure, my man.
Me as well. So first of all, as I talk about all the time, I'm at Deadline.com for breaking news multiple times a day. Obviously, right now, the big news is the strike. What is the status of that as of this recording?
I mean, it's kind of all blown up again, Kyle. I mean, you know, you had the studios finally reached out to the Writers Guild, who are the predominant union in this, the Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA on strike too. But they reached out to them not long after, and I mean literally a matter of hours, after my colleague Peter White and I wrote a story about some back channeling that was happening between them all. There had been no talks over 101 days. So they had eclipsed the 2007-2008 strike, which went on for 100 days. And they said, let's talk. You know, is that quote from the Bible? Come, let us reason together. Turned out, wasn't a lot going on there. A lot of talks, not really a schedule. It was kind of like a day here, a day here, to that. Studios made a proposal on August 11th, and they thought it was an unprecedented proposal, and they were addressing all the things that the Guild wanted, residuals, metrics in terms of transparency on streamers, AI, writers' rooms, the whole deal. Didn't seem to go over so well. Writers Guild respond. A little bit of tension. So on Monday, August 21st, the studios and streamers reached out to the Writers Guild and said, we would like to meet with you personally. Now, we'd like to have a talk. And they really seem to imply, according to what we hear, that they wanted to make a deal. Like, enough is enough. Let's do this. We're done. Like, we're at 100, over 110 days now. Writers Guild went to the meeting. Meeting turned out to some of the biggest deal makers in Hollywood, like Ted Sarandos, Warner Brothers Discovery boss David Zaslav, Universal boss Donna Langley, and Disney boss Bob Iger, to name a few who were in the room at this offsite meeting. They were not so good at reading the room.
Mm.
It seems that according to the WGA, they were given a lecture about how they should be so thankful for what they're being offered, and come on, guys, just go with it and take it. And the WGA said, well, hold on. What you're offering us, or what you offered us almost two weeks ago, reads good at the top line, but when you get into the details, they refer to a lot of loopholes and limitations and stuff like that. And that's issues that we need to deal with. And these issues need to be dealt with in a comprehensive way. We're not going to pick them off, as you guys tend to like to do in your negotiations. And supposedly, the studios were aghast that the writers didn't immediately accept what they were offered and feel so thankful, and were shocked. And so, on August 22nd, literally less than half an hour after the meeting was concluded, so around 8 o'clock at night, the AMPTP, who represents the studios and streamers in these negotiations, sent out a press release with saying, oh my God, look at this great thing we gave to them on August 11th, and it's all full of this great stuff, and amazing, and this is incredible. Now, these two sides are supposed to have a media blackout. Obviously, at Deadline.com, we have sources on both sides, and we're talking to a lot of people, so we know a lot about what's going on. But officially, they have a media blackout. Clearly, they did not have a media blackout on August 22nd. So this thing comes out, and again, top line looks really good. We're going to give them all this money. We're going to do all this stuff, controls over all sorts of things, more transparency than ever with these confidential memos. But then you go down into the fine print. And oddly enough, the AMPTP included an appendix, which had all this fine print. And when you started reading it, a lot of these deals look kind of shaky, defining, well, yes, you can do this, but who is doing this? What now constitutes a showrunner? All this sort of stuff in there. I'm telling you guys all this stuff because here's the punchline. About 4 hours later, the WGA responded, and they basically called BS and said, this was not a negotiation. This meeting was an attempt to make us cave, to quote them. They kind of followed up on stuff that we have reported earlier, that, you know, the strategy of the AMPTP is this divide and conquer, hope to turn them against each other and make some of the writers force their leadership to take a deal, just to get a deal. Obviously, a lot of people are hurting economically, both in the industry and all around LA County. You know, the guy who provides the red plastic cups for catering, he's not providing them because there's nothing to cater now. The dry cleaners, the guy who provides lumber for the set designers and production designers, that's not happening. So we're seeing a multi-billion dollar blast radius here. And the writers are simply saying at this point, you're not bargaining with us. You just want to jam us up. And we're not going to do that. So it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes next. Now, you have to always know there are three things that are always true about Hollywood labor negotiations, which I've been covering for about 12 years, and any negotiation. One, nobody gets everything they want.
Mm-hmm.
Two, eventually there is a deal at the end of the somewhere. Somehow, a mediator might come in, it might be forced, it might be this, someone might finally figure out a mechanism, but there's always a deal. And the third thing is, there's a reason they call this show business and not show friends. And that a lot of these people who are adversaries now, both internally and between the parties or the unions and the studios, will obviously be working together in the future at one point. But I do think that this has become an inflection point now. And I think if there was any notion that there was going to be some sort of quick agreement, and look, I'll add a fourth one to this list. Everybody's posturing at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think the AMPTP really, really strategically misread the situation, and in releasing that August 11th proposal, have put themselves in a position where probably the most strident and militant union in Hollywood, the Writers Guild, has become even more strident and militant in the past 72 hours or so.
Wow. So, you know, we're at the point, we're almost at 4 months now Are we getting to the point where this is going to start? I mean, obviously, it was always going to affect production and has. It's stopped. But are we getting to a point where, as consumers, we're going to see huge gaps in the pipeline or less content now that we're getting to, you know, we're really getting in an extended period here?
Well, I mean, I think is there going to be dead air on network television? No. Is there going to be drama on network television? Not a lot of original drama. You know, ABC will be replaying Ms. Marvel, which they debuted on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. That's also partially to promote the Marvels movie, which is coming out in November. And that's an important thing. Let's remember, it's not just the WGA on strike now. It's also the Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA. So not only do you have nothing being created anew, but you don't have anyone promoting anything. Mm-hmm. So when you have a movie like Blue Beetle, which is a groundbreaking movie, especially in terms of Latino representation and what have you, with some big names in it, George Lopez and many others, none of those people went out and promoted that movie. So Warner Brothers are left with a multi-million dollar movie that isn't looking like it's going to recoup anything soon. Its opening weekend was certainly underwhelming, to put it mildly. Even Fran Drescher, the head of SAG-AFTRA, said that she now believes that the studios and streamers' desire for an extra 12 days in the negotiation with the Actors Union was just so they could promote things like Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Wow.
And to some degree, the latest Mission Impossible. So when you look at what's going to be on your screen in the what would be the fall season starting in about a month, you're going to have stuff on your screen. A lot of it's unscripted. You're going to see a lot of, I would say, chess moves. So Ms. Marvel on ABC, Yellowstone, which has been on Paramount and obviously on the streaming and very, very successful, is now going to have its first season on CBS. Lots of moves around like that. New stuff, which usually would have been several episodes in the can by now going into a fall season, which usually would have started with production and writing happening in April, May. Clearly, that didn't happen with the WGA going on strike. That's not going to happen. I think we're getting to the point where you might not even be able to really resurrect a mid-season slate of dramatic scripted originals. So like seeing Blue Bloods come back in January or stuff like that. The saving grace, perhaps, for linear TV, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, what have you, is sports. Mm-hmm. Specifically the NFL, which still is alive and kicking, pardon the pun. Otherwise, it's going to be thin gruel, I would say, for the most part. Yeah. Now, it's a little different with the streamers. They have stuff in the pipeline, and they're not really held to a standard in terms of the advertising expectations and what have you, though all of them do have an ad tier now. But still, even they are going to see the pipeline's going to start dwindling to some degree. And Netflix have obviously been in the forefront doing a vast amount of international purchases. You know, we joke, if you had a show that was big in Spain 3 years ago, everyone in America is going to see the first two seasons of it on Netflix next year. But I feel like whatever is attracting people still to linear TV, that contract, so to speak, has borderline been breached. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know. I mean, the NFL is always the great powerhouse, and it has been for years as we've seen linear ratings decline. I don't know if you're going to be able to get people back.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading a piece recently that said for the first time ever, there was more streaming hours last month than linear television watching hours, which, for me was kind of, that's like an alarm in my head, like, uh-oh, you know, it's finally happened and it's only going to, I would assume, continue to go that way. And as you said, with the NFL kind of being, you know, the only saving grace in the fall for linear television, if things aren't put together for midseason, I think it's going to be a even bigger drop, you know?
I mean, you might see advantages also emerge because, as that famous expression of former White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste. You know, AMC has things like the Walking Dead Daryl Dixon spinoff with Norman Reedus, which could attract a lot of heat now. I don't think it'll get back to the numbers of Walking Dead had in its heyday, but it's certainly, you know, that is all done and in the can. Norman will obviously not be promoting that. He can't promote that as a member of SAG-AFTRA, but that has possibilities. And that, you know, but if you start looking at network, a lot of NFL, a lot of sports, and a lot of unscripted, you know, a lot of unscripted. Again, Apple TV is going to have season three of The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. That might attract attention too. But you know, this is streaming. The streaming works on a different timeline altogether. It's very hard to see if you see something like season 12 of American Horror Story debuting on FX in September 20th, I believe. It's very hard to see, like, among all that jumble, how are you going to attract viewers? Remember, part of what viewership is about is this mysterious cauldron of appointment viewing and kind of flow. So, you know, you turn on the TV to watch something at 8:30 that you love, Abbott Elementary, and you kind of hang with it for the rest of the night. And the networks depend on that to some extent. That's very, very hard to see. Do I think things like The Continental, the John Wick prequel of sorts that Peacock is going to have on September 22nd? Again, it's done. Mm-hmm. They can't really, there are no actors to promote it, which is going to make it harder. But it's still there and it's something out there. But again, that's streaming. Streaming has that advantage for now. That is going to fade as well. You just can't keep this thing going endlessly. And no matter how many Celebrity Jeopardies or Celebrity Wheel of Fortunes, Survivor, Amazing Race, Masked Singer, et cetera, Bachelor, Golden Bachelor, et cetera, eventually someone's going to want to see an old-fashioned procedural.
Yeah.
And if they're not finding it on TV, they're going to go to the streamers. And again, regardless of how this all plays out, if they solve this week, it's still going to take at least 2 months for shows to show up on television. It's going to hit into whatever scheduling and planning, which is actually a massive deal. And, you know, the kind of secret underbelly of all this. So you getting to watch the shows that you love, Chicago PD, FD, whatever it is, or again, Blue Bloods or whatever it is you want to watch, that's not even going to happen anyway. So you're kind of planning. It's like you're planning for a vacation if the weather doesn't go badly.
Yeah.
And, you know, X factors galore in that. So I don't know. I think it's a little different when you get to the big screen. But, you know, some of those are hard to tell. You know, the Aquaman sequel, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, coming out from Warner Brothers, been moved a bunch of times. Right now, it's for December 20th. But, you know, they're looking at those Blue Beetle numbers.
Yeah.
They're like, if we don't have Jason out there, Momoa, if we don't have Jason out there pushing this, or Amber Heard or anything, what are we going to get?
Yeah.
We're going to hope people are going to want to show up. Again, a little bit of a different thing that's happening with things like, for instance, Joaquin Phoenix and Vanessa Kirby in Napoleon, which is going to end up on Apple eventually. Or you've got the new Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. Sorry, actually, that one is Apple, which is going to be in screens and then show up on Apple. So, you know, big screen has a little bit of wiggle room because of the new realities.
Yeah.
But again, no Leo to promote it.
Yep.
I guess in this case, Martin Scorsese is his own brand, so you can work on that one. But it's very hard to get people into things when the things that attract them, the shiny baubles of celebrity, are no longer part of the equation.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating and makes, at least on my end, for trying to get creative on ways to keep a celebrity interview show with no celebrity interviews. So that's been fun. But, you know, one thing that I think is interesting is that through all this, this summer looks like the movie season could end up being a $4 billion season, which would take us back to pre-pandemic times, which I think tells us the power of movie going, that I think there was a lot of, especially during and immediately after the pandemic, there was a lot of kind of people, I feel like, scare talking, you know, it's never going back to that. And this is the new reality and that sort of thing. And I think Barbie, especially in Oppenheimer and Super Mario Brothers, to an extent, have all shown that people will still go. And so I think that's kind of come at an interesting time in all of these negotiations, as those numbers are showing that people will generally, you know, still go to the theater if they see a reason to. Now, of course, those are both, in my opinion, I don't want to say flash in the pans. They're incredibly, Oppenheimer is one of my top 10 favorite films, and Barbie was amazing. However, those are kind of lightning in a bottle sort of things.
But I think your phrasing is actually really on. Flash did not do so well,
yeah.
My friend.
Yeah.
After all the Ezra Miller scandals, after basically like a film that is a cameo fest, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but if you've ever seen anyone who's ever been associated with a DC hero movie, you might be seeing them in this movie. And it's no spoiler to say the amazing Michael Keaton, mm-hmm. the first of the contemporary big screen Batmans shows up. In fact, almost every Batman shows up except Christian Bale and Val Kilmer. I think Shazam sequel.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there were a lot of these that kind of flamed out. And so I think at the same time as what you're saying, you know, the last Fast and the Furious movie did okay. You know, did all right. Again, incredibly big name heavy, top heavy. I'm wondering if amidst all this, with the strikes and the changes in our viewership, and let's admit, as you said earlier, streaming has become the predominant medium, and it has, and whether or not you want to argue if it ruins our collective experience, or you want to be honest with yourself and say, hey, studio executive, I don't know about you, but the last time I was in a movie theater, there were three guys like on their phone the whole time. There was popcorn on the bottom of my shoe. I couldn't hear the thing half the time, you know, whatever. There's some realities. And I do actually think that's a whole other argument that mm-hmm. needs to be had about the future of cinema. Like, why aren't the cinemas cathedrals of art as opposed to like, you know, seemingly closets in shopping malls?
Yeah.
You know, I think that you might see something interesting happen with the Equalizer 3, which, of course, has the amazing Denzel Washington in it, who is a multi-generational star. And, you know, you just have to see a picture of Denzel smiling and you're pretty much going to be promoted into that movie. But I think that all these changing habits are occurring. One thing, when you look at movies, at least, you know, and this is a pithy analysis of it, but franchises are failing, brother.
Yeah, they really are.
Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Volume 3, it made it. But like, if you really look at what made it this summer, and you know, if you want to call Barbie a flash in the pan or Oppenheimer lightning in a bottle, but these were original things. You know, what Greta Gerwig did with Barbie, what Christopher Nolan did with Oppenheimer, you can have legitimate discussions about the values of that, the pros and cons, but you are talking about a form of artistry. I feel like we might come out of this with a very different landscape for the big screen as well. And it might be one that is not so superhero friendly anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that, you know, what you're saying, extremely interesting. Barbie, you know, and Oppenheimer are such original, besides the fact that they are first, meaning it's not a franchise per se. They are extremely original films from, you know, the cinematography. I mean, everything about them is amazing. And I hope that Hollywood does take notice to that, because I hear all the time from listeners and readers and stuff that, they're getting fatigue. And I know people have been saying about superhero fatigue forever, but it's, I feel like what they're really saying is they want more original stuff. They want more creative stuff. They don't want cookie cutter stuff all the time. And I hope executives, take note of that, because it has been a very interesting time this summer with what's worked and what hasn't.
But I mean, here, part of the question is though, Kyle, is can they? You know,
yeah.
Hollywood is built on many things, but stability and longevity are one of them. To make a film is a 3-year process, often at best. And that's the fast tracking, right? So you've got the stuff. I mean, The Flash is a great example. Ezra Miller was involved in so many scandals that by any other definition, it was a career killer.
Yeah.
But he is literally, often twice, no spoiler meant, but if you know, the film's been out for a bit, so, you know, often twice in every scene of the movie. So at a $200+ million budget, what are you going to do? Like, this isn't Kevin Spacey in playing John Paul Getty, you know, pull him out and bring Christopher Plummer in, right? This is Ezra Miller as The Flash. The movie's called The Flash. He's in it all the time. So you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
You got to go with it. Like, you can't pivot fast enough to change this. So I think that that's also part of it, is there's still going to be at least another year of this odd, uncomfortable, and perhaps unprecedented friction in terms of what's actually getting people in theaters. You know, the last Mission Impossible did not save cinema like the way the Top Gun sequel did with Tom Cruise the year before. To see how something like Napoleon or Killer Moon does, which are, if you use the criteria that we're talking about, you know, they are original. I mean, I know there's been other movies about Napoleon and what have you, but let's be honest. Yeah. This is really Scott Napoleon. I mean, this is basically, you know, this is 18th century Gladiator.
Right.
You know, even with one of the same actors from Gladiator. So, you know, he's playing to his strengths, but with the original content, whether or not, you know, you're interested in the Emperor Napoleon or not. But will that work? Or was Oppenheimer like, well, that just Oppenheimer was the counter programming to Barbie. There was this great symmetry where you saw, you know, Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie holding up Oppenheimer tickets as well. Like, people were kind of like, just get the cinemas open, get people in. Is that going to continue? I mean, Napoleon and Killer Moon are both Apple properties, ultimately. How does Apple promote that? And also then, to a certain degree, how much does Apple really care?
Yeah.
Yes, they won an Oscar for Coda. Yes, they have a pretty muscular streaming service with some really great shows, some of which everybody knows, Ted Lasso, some of which people forget about, like For All Mankind. But that ain't where they make their bucks, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, I people like, you know, if you buy a new Apple phone, you get Apple TV for like, a year for free or something like that. Like, they're about product, you know, and they're now moving obviously into a VR range that might leave Facebook/Meta in the dust. So that's a whole new landscape. And then you got to consider that with all these talks and all these negotiations. One thing that was very interesting about 2007, 2008, the writers, and it feels like ancient times if you think about it. But if you remember back then, you could go onto iTunes and download a movie.
Right.
It took like 5 hours to do it, or 5 days. We could download a TV show, right? I remember once downloading, I don't know if people remember it, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Which was sort
of after West Wing. And I was in Europe with family in the summer of 2008. And so before I left New York to do that, I downloaded like most of that season of that. Well, I bought it and downloaded it off Apple, right? Again, I left my computer, went away for a day, came back, it was there. So, but in 2007, 2008, the Writers Guild, one of their major sticking points was this notion of, well, what's all that going to turn into? Like, clearly it's not going to stop with someone buying a show for $4.99. There's more to this. And of course, the more to this was Netflix and then Amazon and then everybody else with streaming and streaming becoming where you're at. So I wonder, with a lot of talk about AI and how that is planting seeds for another revolution, which it may or may not. It's always hard to tell with new technologies. But the other element of this is, what about things like virtual reality and the metaverse and what have you? Like, are you, let's say the cinemas pick up on what we're putting down. They say, you know what, Dominic and Kyle are right. We got to fix these up. We got to have grown-ups in there, not teenagers who don't care. We got to make sure these are beautiful places. The food's got to improve. The quality of improve. We got to make sure no one's on their phone. Watch out for acts of violence, blah, 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 right? They do all that. And then you and I get these little eye sets and a headphone we put on, and we just experience Star Wars for real in the back of a TIE fighter in our own living room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And suddenly all those exhibitors are like, we can't give this stuff away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting time. And actually thinking about the future, not as far as that, but the fall. What do we have to look forward to the fall? I know I'm looking forward to some of the horror films that are coming out and American Horror Stories.
You mean like Saw X?
I'm looking forward to The Nun too. I'm a huge Conjuring Universe fan. I love any horror, and of course I'm looking forward to the new installment of American Horror Story. We should see how that turns out. Both of the Apple films.
Exorcist movie. There's a new Exorcist.
Yes.
Movie, Exorcist.
Yes. I'm excited about that. What do people have? You know, what are the big things you're thinking is going to hit this fall?
Well, I'll start on the big screen. I'll move to the small screen.
Okay.
Big screen, Killers of the Flower Moon, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese, holy trinity of American cinema. I would say The Exorcist, Believer, because I love The Exorcist movies.
Yeah.
Ordinary Angels with Hilary Swank, I think is going to be very interesting. Remember, Killers of the Flower Moon will be in theaters, and then it will be on Apple. Napoleon from Ridley Scott with Joaquin Phoenix and Vanessa Kirby. Really looking forward to that. Never really understood why people are into Napoleon, but always understand why people are into Ridley Scott.
Absolutely.
And that, again, is also going to be in theaters. It's going to be on the small screen. I think the new Ava DuVernay film, based on the Isabella Wilkinson movie Cast, doesn't have a date yet, doesn't have a distributor, debuting at the Venice Film Festival. But Ava is always an interesting, groundbreaking filmmaker.
Yeah.
This is her first return to the big screen in several years, having moved mainly into television, Emmy-winning shows like When They See Us. So that should be very interesting to see. Sofia Coppola's Priscilla. I mean, I know we got Elvis last year, but I got to tell you, I think the Priscilla story, slightly also based on tragic current events in her life, in her family's life, could be the more interesting one.
Mm.
I think that, as I said before, Equalizer 3, because it's Denzel, dude.
Absolutely.
I think those are some really, really interesting ones. Interesting to see, you know, we talk a lot at Deadline, especially our box office maestro, Anthony D'Alessandro, about, you know, where is the tipping point that the labor strife could bring? For instance, if the Dune sequel is moved, if Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom are moved again, that's going to show, okay, this is a write-off this year, you know? So
yeah.
I think things like that are really out there. So those are ones I'm really looking to there. There's a new version of The Color Purple, obviously, well, you know, coming out on Christmas.
Yeah,
again,
the musical version.
Yeah, hopefully. I think those are good. You know, we talked a little bit about some stuff. I'm a big Walking Dead fan, so I'm into Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon. I'm basically like, what took you so long? I'm also into, we don't, you know, when it comes out, the one, the Michonne and Rick Grimes one, a miniseries, that is going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is that this fall?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not entirely, but I think that one's also, or maybe early next year, but, you know, again, these are also movable feasts.
Yeah.
American Horror Story always interests me, you know, even if it's just to hate watch.
Yes.
I think some of those are fun. I think, you know, there's going to be a new season of Top Boy on Netflix, season 3, which is the final season, so I'm into that. So there's the Boys spinoff, Gen V, which is coming, I believe, at the end of September on Amazon. You know, I love The Boys. I just think they're amazing. So let's see where that goes. So I think there's a lot of stuff out there. The question is, you know, is it, you know, there's yet another one of the Power franchises coming out, Power Force. The question is, like anything in this era, and we're still in the era of peak TV, even if it doesn't seem like it right now, it's finding all this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, recently we had the third and final season of Reservation Dogs, which isn't quite over yet, but almost. Reservation Dogs is one of the most acclaimed shows around, though snubbed endlessly at the Emmys. But amidst all this, with the labor strife, with the industry shifts and change and stuff like that, it felt like, unfortunately, this incredibly original show got overlooked because we're just trying to all figure out where this goes.
Yeah.
You know, I like to use my Uncle Steve and my Auntie Rose, who are in their 80s now. I often use them as a barometer because they don't know anything. Maybe they know who Ted Sarandos is, but they don't really know who any of these guys are, right? They know some guy runs Disney, but they don't know who these people are, who we talk about all the time. But for them, there's some real stuff of real shows they love, like Blue Bloods, right? And when that's not on, when their man Tom Selleck is not coming back, that feels like a disruption to them.
Mm-hmm.
And not the type of disruption that corporate types love to brag about. So then you find yourself, I think, in a situation, and this is the greatest unknown of all of this. At what point do you lose people?
Yeah.
At what point does TV or cinema become a CD?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, I don't do CDs, dude. They're not even good coasters anymore. I got Spotify. I got Amazon. I got Apple Music. I got 500 million songs in my phone. Why would I buy a CD?
Yeah.
You know? And someone goes, oh, sound quality. And you're like, I listen to it on my headphones, dude. It's compressed. I don't care.
Right.
You know, like, if that's what you're worried about, you clearly have never heard of the entire history of radio.
Right.
You know, so like, it's the Chinese have that expression, you know, hope you live in interesting times. But interesting times doesn't always mean interesting in the good way.
Yeah.
It also means interesting in the unsteady way. And I think that that's where we're at here. Whether or not these technologies end up being used for what they think they're going to be used for, et cetera, I don't know. But what I do know is that there are a lot of storm clouds, from the strikes to the change in technology to AI, to viewing habits, to the monetization, because people aren't making the money they want to. I mean, now the streamers are so expensive. I did some math recently. They've all hiked their prices so much. If you have the majority of the streamers now, it's like you're paying for cable again.
Right.
It's like about $100, right? Yep. So at what point are you like, why not? Hey, this is like, we got cord cutting. Are we gonna have broadband cutting soon? And people are just gonna go down to one, or they're gonna be like, look, I want my Netflix and my Disney for my kid, and that's it, I'm done.
Yeah. You
know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and that's actually another episode I want to talk to you about in the future is how much, you know, when do we cut it off because of how much everything's going up. Dom, thank you so much for speaking with me. I, as always, as I say this all the time, I'm checking deadline.com multiple times a day because it's breaking news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When do you rest?
I sleep when I'm dead, my friend.
There you go. Dominic Patton, thank you so much. And of course, Deadline is the destination for everything that is going on in entertainment, Hollywood, the behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, everything. It is the one-stop destination. And I can't thank you enough for speaking with me.
Thank you, my friend.
Dom Patton, love having him on the show. Always. I mean, he is just a wealth of knowledge. That's why he is senior editor at Deadline Hollywood, deadline.com. Once again, thanks to Dom for joining me. Thank you for listening. Get, like I said, look, Pop Culture Weekly, you know, I am one person and I do the content myself. You know, I'm lucky enough to have people that help me get it out there and all that stuff. But I'm a one-man show in that regard. And so there's no way I can cover even a fraction of the stuff that Deadline does, and that's why they are my go-to source. I love Deadline, always have. I use them, like I said, throughout the day, multiple times a day to see what is going on because they're breaking the news of, you know, pop culture, what's going on in Hollywood. So Deadline.com, thank you. Thank you to Dom once again. We'll have him on again, of course. And I thank you for hanging out with me once again. Please, if you enjoy this episode, share it. Hit me up. Let me know what you think. What do you think about the strike? Let's talk on social. I'm at KMacMusic on Twitter and Instagram and Threads. I'm at Kyle McMahon or Real Kyle McMahon everywhere else. So hit me up. Let's discuss all of your favorite pop culture. All right. I love you. See you next week. We out.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Weekly. Hear all the latest at popcultureweekly.com.
When you got 100 voices singing, who could hear a lousy whistle blow? And the world will know. And the world will learn, and the world will wonder how we made the tables turn.